Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
From the depths of the sea, this is Transmissions from Atlantis, a sci-fi, fantasy, and horror podcast with a special emphasis on Doctor Who. Featuring the creators of Seekers of the Lost Worlds, Rita and J.C. Della Torre.
Hey everybody, my name is J.C. Della Torre.
And I'm Rita Della Torre.
And this is episode 121 of Transmissions from Atlantis. And we've got another great episode for you guys. In our rapid fire segment, we're going to have a conversation about The Walking Dead season finale.
Needless to say, if it's part of rapid fire, we ain't going to be talking that much about it.
We're also going to talk Iron Fist, The Attack on Titan season 2 debut, MST3K, Valerian, and of course our main topic this week is going to be Beauty and the Beast.
Yes, it deserves its own main topic.
And of course, there's been a ton of Doctor Who news in preparation for the new season, which is only a couple weeks away now, so we're almost there.
Yep.
The wait is almost over.
And in just before we get started with our regular rapid fire, though, Seekers of the Lost Worlds, guys, our Seed and Spark campaign is winding down. We are in our last week for the campaign.
Yep, the very last week. And if you want to get involved in the movie making experience, this is your last shot. We still have movie props.
Not that many, though.
Not that many.
They're almost all gone, but we still have a few items left. And I know a lot of you have probably been waiting towards the end of the campaign to contribute. So don't wait too much longer, because April 8th.
This is the end of the campaign.
Yeah. April 8th is the last day, folks.
Yep, and we're hoping that some of you got a chance to see the new trailer that Rita made for Seekers of the Lost Worlds. It was excellent. And it actually was shown in a movie theater during a debut of a local indie film that came out, which name escapes me. I'm sorry.
It's been a long weekend, people. We've been spring cleaning, and we've been getting down and dirty and throwing stuff out, and we're tired.
Yes. But we're not too tired to talk to you, so coming up, let's talk our rapid fire! Fire!
Really?
Yes. Why not? All right, it's time for our rapid-fire segment, and the first one that we're going to talk about is Iron Fist!
Okay, so let's see. We've had Daredevil.
Yes.
We've had Jessica Jones.
Yes.
We've had Luke Cage.
Yes. Sweet Christmas.
And then they give us Iron Fist. That sounds like a porn name.
Or a sex toy.
Yeah, baby! Yeah!
Yeah.
I think we got like about 8 episodes into the series before we actually gave up on it.
Yes. Unfortunately, we did. And, I actually have a friend that calls Iron Fist the Iron Feminist for the character. I'm sorry.
The show is poorly written. And I have seen some posts that actually that people put that the Kung Fu is actually pretty accurate, because Kung Fu isn't as rapid as we think it's supposed to be.
Yes, but with that said, what we're used to seeing in cinema is rapid fire action.
Yeah.
Not slow motion.
We get that that might not be real. There's a difference between what is real and what is going to be presented to us as entertainment. Entertainment is always going to be slightly exaggerated.
Of course. And I think the drawback is that they tried to be so realistic with the Kung Fu that it took away from the entertainment value of the broadcast.
I think. Because the action scene very lackluster.
Yeah.
Iron Fist seemed to constantly be getting his butt kicked.
Yeah, for a great Kung Fu master taught by Buddhists, he seemed to get his ass kicked a heck of a lot. And not only that, for somebody that spent his whole, you know, last 15 years with Buddhist monks, he sure is freaking emotional. You know, you'd think he'd be able to, and you know, control his chi, or, you know, keep from being, you know, like a
whiny little...
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry, he's a whiny little...
Yep.
You know.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Moving on.
Yeah, so Iron Fist, yeah, we're not going to watch anymore, sorry.
Yep. Nope.
Bring on the Punisher.
Bring on the Punisher. Now that'll have some awesome action.
Yes.
Okay. Walking Dead season finale was terrible.
Oh, hell no.
Okay, I'm not going to say it was terrible.
It was horrible.
I'm not going to say that.
Horrible.
No, I disagree.
Bullcrap.
But, let me just put it this way.
The editing sucked.
It was a crappy end to a really crappy season of The Walking Dead.
Yes. You know, at this point, I think I would have preferred a cliffhanger ending. At least that would have been more entertaining.
Well, when you spend 50 minutes of the episode building up to the 3 minutes of action that we actually got in the end of the episode.
Spoilers.
You know, and the whole...
Spoilers.
Cutting back to Sasha in the coffin, you know, then cutting back to her with Maggie, cutting back to her with the big...
Abraham.
Abraham, yes. I forgot his name already, jeez. You know, and then cutting back to live... It was thoroughly confusing. I had trouble following where we were.
Maybe they were trying to come up with some really cool way to, you know, edit this in a way that they were showing what was happening to Sasha, but it came off as so confusing.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
And then as soon as Negan revealed the coffin, you knew exactly what was going to happen. I mean, there was no... shocking or mystery or twist that...
Spoilers.
Obviously, Sasha took the pill, and obviously she turned herself into a zombie so that she can attack Negan as soon as he opens the damn coffin.
That
was so predictable.
Scene, yeah. The whole episode...
Yes.
...was predictable.
The
garbage group.
The garbage group. Who did not see that coming? I mean, for the love of God.
Okay. I know this might... take a little bit more time in our rapid fire segment, but please, we have to talk about how the way these people talk.
I think we talked about it last time,
make
too.
Absolutely no sense whatsoever, and it makes me angry because that is poor writing, that is poor plot planning, and...
It's annoying as hell!
It's idiotic! You're going to tell me that after only a year and a half, 2 years of living...
Well, it's been a little bit longer than that.
Well, still...
5 years, okay?
These folks would have been living absolutely normal lives a few years ago, and they're going to degenerate to this type of language speaking?
Yes.
I can understand if a few generations go by, right? Yeah.
What was it we were saying when she said that she wanted to lay with Rick? You know, you were like, oh, Rick doesn't want to lay with ugly cheek like you or whatever. And then I was like, well, you know, Rick likes to lay with women that can complete full sentences out loud.
Yeah. It just bothered me so much because the bad grammar writing for this group made no sense.
Well,
it's not
a grammar thing. It's more of just that, you know, they tried to make this group seem like it's some kind of post-apocalyptic Mad Max kind of group that
yeah,
there's no freaking reason for
exactly.
it.
Exactly. But this type of group mentality would not even exist except for maybe a few generations later.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just don't get it.
The world has de-evolved a little bit more.
And who didn't see the twist coming? I mean, it was painfully obvious what was going to happen.
Spoilers.
As soon as they showed up in Alexandria, you knew what was going to happen.
They're like, oh, look, nice place you got here. We want it.
Yeah.
They just about said it in that way, too.
So this Walking Dead season was just horrible, horrible, horrible. The finale left not very good. And I just hope that they go back, they get the writers all together, and they realize that, you know, they just can't coast through a season like this. I mean, to me, that's what they did. They looked at the comic book, they basically wrote what was in the comic book for the most part, added a few things here and there, and then thought that's all they needed to do, and that fans were going to eat it up. And, you know,
the fans are not happy either, because the fans have been nitpicking every tiny little wrong detail about the show.
Oh my god, and the mistakes they're making in editing. My gosh. When you have the freaking lens cap on the rifle, and she's looking through the rifle, and the lens cap is right on it!
On both sides.
On both sides! How do you miss that? If you're the actress looking through the damn rifle, how do you not see that it's stopped?
Shouldn't she have stopped and say, hey, guys, just so you know, while we're filming this, the caps are on. Shouldn't we take these off?
Yes.
I mean, seriously.
I mean, and that's not the only thing. There's been a bunch of production
mistakes. The CGI's been bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not been a good year for The Walking Dead, and hopefully they go back, you know, circle the wagons and bring a better product next season, because this past season's been a rough one.
Well, think about it this way. Even the season premiere had a lot of that back and forth kind of editing feeling that just didn't quite jive either. Okay, let's move on, because I think we've talked about Walking Dead enough.
Yep.
Attack on Titan, Season 2. Thank you! Finally!
Yes.
It finally premiered April 1st. We've only been waiting for Attack on Titan for what, like...
5 years?
I don't know about 5 years, but...
It feels like it.
It feels like it's been 5 years. And I get it, they wanted to try to catch up with the manga, but dang, it's a long hiatus.
Yeah, it was way too long.
It's like Sherlock hiatus.
Yeah, it was way too long, and, you know, I'm eager to see what happens next. And the bad thing is that because we have to watch this through Crunchyroll, it's a weekly thing, and we can't just binge on it.
Yes, right?
We have
to wait. That you are correct about.
We can't binge on it, so that's going to suck. All right, so speaking of long-awaited returns, Mystery Science Theater 3000 returns April 14th.
Woohoo!
Now, they're not telling us what movies they're going to be parodying, but we've seen trailers, and I gotta say, it looks like it has the old energy of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Obviously, the Mads with Patton Oswalt and Felicia Day.
Looks like it's going to be fantastic.
Jonah Ray looks like he's going to be good, and the bots are the bots.
Now, weren't they going to be doing another Fathom event, and one of the movies they're going to be riffing is actually The Five Doctors?
That's Riff Trax. So
oh, Riff Trax is doing different. That. Okay. Yeah, either way, we're still going to go see that.
Yes. But yeah, so it should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. And I'm not sure how they're going to be releasing MST3K. I'm not sure if it's going to be a binge-worthy, you know, drop all the episodes at once, or if they're going to just do them once a week. So that remains to be seen, but I know I'm looking forward to it, and that's going to be a big weekend for us, because obviously it's also Easter weekend, and also Doctor Who returns, which of course we'll be talking about a little later in the show.
Yep. Alright, so next up, Valerian. The full trailer just released, and oh my god.
This movie is going to suck.
I don't think so.
It's
I don't
going
agree.
To suck because it looks too good in the trailer.
Okay, here's the thing. I know that you were burned with Jupiter Rising.
Yes.
Because Jupiter Rising was very visually stunning.
It looked amazing.
And then the movie sucked.
And the movie was terrible.
But
yes.
This is different. Because the makers of Valerian are the people who made Lucy.
Yep.
Which we loved.
Yep.
And Fifth Element, which we also loved.
Yep.
Both movies that were very visually stunning.
And Mila Kunis isn't in this.
Yeah. Alright, so I have high hopes for Valerian. I mean, from what we've seen in the trailer, it's going to be
It's going to be a smorgasbord for the eyes.
Yes, yes, exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth.
It's going to be one of the most tantalizing sci-fi movies that we've seen in a long time.
Even if the story isn't quite up to par, you know, with like Lucy or Fifth Element, the film is still going to be visually stunning enough to make an impact.
And if you really think about it, Fifth Element and Lucy both were not exactly, you know, Citizen Kane, for crying out loud.
But they were still great films.
They were still entertaining, fun films that you enjoyed watching and that were visual eye candy. And obviously, Valerian's definitely going to have the eye candy, but whether there's a story to it or not, we'll have to see.
I'm
interested to see how it goes.
All right, so that does it for Rapid Fire.
And coming up next, we are going to talk Beauty and the Beast.
Really? You just butchered it.
La 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 la.
La, 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 la. Okay, you can stop now.
La, 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 la.
You can stop.
Screw you, man.
When one speaks of the perfect symmetry between science fiction, fantasy, and horror podcasting, with a special emphasis on Doctor Who, one should become a connoisseur of Transmissions from Atlantis, featuring JC and Rita Della Torre. While both will have a passionate and vigorous argument on the subject of the day, they do so with the utmost respect.
What? That wasn't stupid.
You're stupid.
You're stupid.
You're stupid. Stupid.
And dignity.
Commander Riker here. I'm by the book.
Prime Directive kind of guy.
Prime Directive.
Join Transmissions from Atlantis weekly at transmissionsfromatlantis.com and part of the ESO network. Yes. It's quite good, really.
Winter turns to spring. Famine turns to feast. Nature points the way. Nothing left to say. Beauty and the Beast.
I'm going to talk for the next 15 minutes about Beauty and the Beast. And
no, you're not.
I'll let Rita talk every once in a while, but for the most part, this
Shut
is my...
Shut your hole!
Okay.
Beauty and the Beast is my thing, not yours.
All right, go ahead.
So shut your trap. Okay. Main thing I'm going to say. Beauty and the Beast live action versus Beauty and the Beast the animated version. Everyone knows that out of all of the animated princess films, Beauty and the Beast has always been my favorite. I actually prefer the live action.
Really?
To the animated film.
Wow.
For various reasons. There's new music. There's more depth to the characters. There's more backstory to the characters. This film fills in plot holes from the animated film. And it does it well.
Yep.
So, it's fantastic all the way around. I mean, the music itself was just so fantastic. My new favorite song in Beauty and the Beast is not Beauty and the Beast. It's Evermore. It's mm-hmm. Beast's song. I love that song. It is amazing.
Yep, and what was interesting is I remember asking you while we were watching the film, were these songs from like the Broadway show or something? And no, these were all new songs created strictly for the film.
What I liked also is that there's, they tried to stay true to the animated while at the same time making it more plausible in a live action film, because obviously there are certain things in animated film that you're not going to be able to pull off.
Although I will say they did one hell of a one-to-one job with most of the scenes.
Yes,
if you really think about it. And not only that, out of all the live action Disney films that have been made off of the off the animated versions, right? Cinderella comes to mind, Maleficent, this was the first one that they actually tried to do one-to-one. I mean, in those other movies, there was like little hints of the animated version in the live-action film, but it wasn't really the same stories. This was almost shot-for-shot of Beauty and the Beast, the animated movie, but it was almost like you're getting a live-action version that's a director's cut, because there was like more of the movie.
Yep.
And like you said, they completely filled in some plot holes. They gave so much backstory to the characters that that's probably what I enjoyed most about this movie, was finding out more about Belle, about her mother, about her past, finding more about the Beast,
and his history.
And his history, yeah.
And even Gaston has mm-hmm. more to him.
Yeah.
We know he was part of the war.
Yeah.
We know he came back, and we know he's troubled, because in the live action film, he's actually more violent.
Oh yeah.
Than in the animated film.
Yeah, and you've mentioned it a couple of times that during the Kill the Beast song, your favorite line of the song is when LeFou's talking about that, the monster may not be the Beast.
Yeah, there's a monster that's released, but it might not be I can't remember the exact lyric, but he's talking about Gaston being the monster
right.
he's released that needs to be taken care of.
Yeah, exactly.
And I love that in this film, LeFou is a character who you can tell is infatuated with Gaston.
Of course.
But then towards the end, he's realizing Gaston isn't who he thought he was.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, you know what? I don't like you anymore because you're a violent monster, so how about
yeah.
no?
Yeah. And I gotta say, the whole LeFou controversy thing was just so overblown. I mean, I just didn't feel like it was anything out of the ordinary.
No, because it's not. And the thing is that it shouldn't be.
Exactly.
And the folks out there that were making such a huge, big deal about it, I'm sorry. To me, I feel like they're the ones with the problem, because they can't deal with the evolving world.
And I've heard the argument, well, we don't want people pushing their gay agenda on us. There was no agenda here. It was just, LeFou was infatuated with Gaston. What's the big deal?
Exactly. Nobody's pushing any agenda on anybody.
Yeah.
Disney just took the film and tried to make it diverse.
Yes.
That is all.
And let me tell you, it made the Gaston song so much funnier.
Oh!
So much funnier.
Yes. Remember in the original animated film, the whole, scene where, and every last inch of me's covered in hair?
Yeah.
They replaced that line with the hunting line, where, he's going to shoot for the liver, I've come from behind, and then LeFou's like, is that fair? I don't care. They actually replaced that line, and I actually prefer the line from the new
song. Did they actually replace it, or
yeah.
was that just an extra verse that they added in?
No, it's not an extra verse.
Because I could have sworn I remember hearing the hair part.
Mm-mm. No, you heard that from the late show's thing where they
James,
the street.
Yeah, the James Cole,
yes.
Cauldron or whatever I think his name is. Yeah.
There was just so many amazing things in the film. Now, there were a few differences, and I didn't mind these differences. Some people, obviously, who are very...
The purists,
had a problem with it. Like, for example, Belle's father. In this film, he was an artist.
Mm-hmm.
In the original film...
He was the inventor.
He was the inventor.
In this one, Belle's the inventor.
Yes.
Yep.
Which I like. They're broadening her intelligence even more. Now mm-hmm. she's not just a bookworm, she's also an inventor. And that's
yep.
amazing to me.
Yep.
I like that... In the original film, the Beast gifted her the library.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I never liked about the original animated series was that the Beast was illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
I never liked that, because this is even as a young boy.
He was an educated...
He was a noble, he was an aristocrat.
Yeah.
He should have known how to read.
Right.
So I like that in this film, they made him intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
He knew the literary classics.
Yep.
And he didn't just gift her the library. He just kind of showed it to her kind of casually, like, okay, here are all my books. Yep. Read all you want.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Another difference, let's see, Chip.
Yep.
Chip was a bigger character in the original animated series. Now, if you remember, when Belle and her father
the
were...
The animated movie, you mean.
The animated movie, that's right. When they were locked up at the end of the film by Gaston in their basement, Chip was the one who actually broke them out.
Right.
But in this, in the live-action movie, they just picked the lock. Chip didn't actually do anything.
Right.
Another thing that I really liked. One of the big loopholes in the animated film was the fact that the village had no idea there was this castle and this prince in the middle of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And they never thoroughly explained that, ever. Right. In the live-action film, they explained it.
Yeah, it was part of the spell.
Yeah, it wasn't just the castle that was under any enchantment. The entire village was, too.
Yep.
Because they were made to forget.
Yep, and one of the funniest scenes was at the end when everybody's being reunited and, you know, Cogsworth is like, can I go back to being a clock? Can I go back to being a clock?
Yeah, because his wife was not a nice person.
No.
He did not want anything to do with her. That was just hilarious.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Oh, Ewan McGregor, oh my God.
I had no idea that was Ewan McGregor until I read the credits. That shocked me when I saw that.
He apparently took months and months of dictation lessons so he can get the French accent down perfectly.
Hmm. Yeah, I gotta say, it was a pleasant surprise on how truthful they were to the original material, but how they also made it their own. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And made it unique, made it feel fresh and new, while at the same time still giving you the feel that you're watching Beauty and the Beast. And I thought one of the most important decisions that they could possibly make was keeping a lot of the original music. Because out of all the Disney movies, when you hear the music from Beauty and the Beast, you know, you are instantly taken to Beauty and the Beast. I mean, Aladdin, to an extent, it's the same difference too, but Beauty and the Beast in particular, when you start hearing the beautiful, you know, classical sound of, you just get taken back to France and taken back to the castle, the Beast Castle, and Belle and everybody being there. And that they kept that, and that they introduced it almost identically to the way it was in the animated film, I thought was brilliant.
Oh, and another thing. The Enchanted Book.
Yes.
How cool was the book?
Yes, that was a new edition, and it was very, very cool. You know, because, I mean, you have to imagine that, you know, it had to be rough for the Beast not being able to go out or do anything. So the Enchantress gave him this book so that he could still transport himself out there, even though he can't really, you know, go anywhere.
Yeah, because it's only the past, and it's only kind of like the Ghost of Christmas Past. It's like,
exactly,
you can go in the past, no one sees you kind of thing.
Exactly.
There were just so many tiny little changes in this film that I think enhanced the film.
Yes.
Like for example, when she goes into the West Wing for the first time.
Right.
Remember in the original animated film, Belle goes into the room. She starts to lift the glass jar to touch the rose.
Mm-hmm.
I always hated that scene because, number one, you're going to walk into some strange dude's room. You see this enchanted glowing floating rose, and your instinct is going to be, ooh, I gotta go touch that.
Right.
And this scene, in the live action, she didn't do that. Okay, because that's normal.
Right. That makes more sense.
That makes more sense.
All right, so we gotta talk about the singing, because that's one of the biggest complaints about this movie, is that apparently some people thought the singing wasn't up to par of what the original animated movie was.
Well, no offense to Emma Watson. I do love her version of Belle immensely. But Paige O'Hara, who is the original voice actress who did Belle in the animated film, her voice is so melodic in the original animated film that, to me, she will always be Belle in my head when it comes to the voice.
Right.
No offense to Emma, she did do a fantastic job. As far as Beast, though, I love Dan Stevens' version of the Beast, how he talks, how he sings.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you on that. I thought he was superior to whoever played the Beast in the...
I don't even remember.
Yeah, in the animated series. See, now you got me doing animated movie.
Gaston, I don't really have any preference.
I like the animated Gaston better because, to me, the more beefy beefcake Gaston is, to me, more realistic as somebody that's vain and has that vanity to him. You know, that one line when he's talking about, you know, 5 dozen eggs and 4 dozen eggs and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It made sense with, you know, super beefcake Gaston in the animated film. But when you see the guy that's playing Gaston in this one, he's not that built.
Luke Evans is not the Rock, in other words.
Yeah, Luke Evans is not the Rock. So it's kind of like, where did the 5 dozen eggs go, buddy? Because okay, it ain't now, in your abs or, you know, in your biceps.
Now let's talk about LeFou. Josh Gad as LeFou totally beats out the original LeFou in my eyes.
Well, to me, the original LeFou isn't exactly that memorable. He's just kind of, you know, some henchman, you know, of Gaston. While Josh Gad's version of
drives the story.
Well, I wouldn't say drives the story, but he definitely is a main... stirrer of the story, so to speak.
Yes. Okay, Mrs. Potts. Angela Lansbury versus Emma Thompson.
Angela Lansbury. Come on. Come on. I mean, Emma Thompson did a very credible job. She's an amazing actress, we all know that. But Angela Lansbury, come on.
Sure. I don't know, I completely agree with you. Okay, one last thing, and then we can start wrapping this conversation up. The ending of the film.
Mm-hmm.
First thing, in the animated film, Gaston stabbed the Beast.
Right.
In the live action, he actually shot him, like, a couple times.
Yeah.
Also, the Beast transformation at the end.
Oh, yes.
It was wonderful. I loved it, because they didn't have him regenerating like the Doctor like they did in the animated series. I always hated seeing the light shooting out of his fingers. It was so weird.
That and, you know...
Oh, the Enchantress!
Well, hold on. Let's not completely jump out of it. I mean, I know you're excited, but calm the hell down. On the transformation, another thing that I preferred this version to the animated version was the fact that Belle knew it was the Beast that was standing in front of her after he transformed into the prince.
Yeah.
She wasn't like in the animated version where Belle's like, Beast? Is that you? Duh! Yes, of course. That's, you just saw the stuff happen.
You know?
Come on. So you know that's him.
Yeah, it's like, it is you. No crap, lady.
It's
changed right in front of you.
Yeah, it's like, what? You know what? The fireworks didn't give it away. It's me. Come on. You know? But yeah, so, I mean, I thought that little change was also more toward the realism. Now let's talk about what you want to talk about.
Okay, so the Enchantress had a much bigger part to play.
Yeah, the Enchantress, you really only see her right at the beginning of the animated film. The Enchantress in the animated film, you only see her for that one little part in the beginning to kind of tell the story of how the Beast became the Beast. But in this film, she, like you said, she's got a major role.
Yeah, you see her at the beginning. You actually see her again towards the middle of the film, even though you don't know it's her.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see her again at the end of the film, and that's when you realize, okay. Mm-hmm. So she's been keeping an eye on all of them.
Yep.
All of those years.
Yep. So, do we even have to rate it?
No.
I mean, it's obvious.
It's a 10.
If we could go 11, we'd probably go 11 or 15 or 35.
Infinity.
Infinity plus 2.
It is my new favorite film.
Yeah, it was a great movie. It's safe for kids. You know, it's not overly scary. I can't think of any scenes that I would think that are... I mean, maybe the wolf scene a little bit, but I mean, if you've seen the animated movie...
It's not any scarier than the wolf scene in the animated.
Right. And I just thought it was a great, great adaption, and I loved it, and I can't wait to see it again. That's going to do it for Beauty and the Beast. Coming up next, we're talking Doctor Who.
Wee-oo! Ooh!
Really?
Hey, you sang Beauty and the Beast, man.
Hi, this is Siri. I would never, never ever listen to the Earth Station One podcast. Who the heck says howdy anyway? Why don't you listen to Chris Hardwick instead? I can get you his information. The Nerdist is everywhere anyway, haha. That was a joke. The Earth Station One podcast. It's time to let your inner geek out to play. You can find them at www.earthstationone.com or up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace, and we're done.
Hello, this is Nick Briggs, the voice of the Daleks, and you're listening to Transmissions from Atlantis. And I urge you to listen, or you will be exterminated!
Where is the doctor now?
I haven't the faintest idea.
Is that credible?
It's true.
You're the woman he loves.
No, I'm not.
She's lying.
The doctor does not and has never loved me. I'm not lying.
Confirmed. The life form is not lying.
Impossible. This is a trick.
No, it isn't.
My information is correct. You are the woman who loves the doctor.
Yes, I am. I've never denied it. But whoever said he loved me back, he's the doctor. He doesn't go around falling in love with people. And if you think he's anything that small or that ordinary, then you haven't the first idea of what you're dealing with.
Your Majesty, I assure you, she is the perfect bait. When this woman is in danger, the doctor will always come.
Oh, you are a moron. No, he won't.
He's probably already here.
No, he isn't. Of course he isn't.
Possibly on this ship.
Well, go on. Scan it then. Go on, why don't you?
River.
Two hearts, stupid clothes. You can't miss him.
River.
Go on, scan the whole parsec. He's not here. God knows where he is right now, but I promise you, he's doing whatever the hell he wants and not giving a damn about me, and I'm just fine with that. When you love the doctor, it's like loving the stars themselves. You don't expect a sunset to admire you back. And if I happen to find myself in danger, let me tell you, the doctor is not stupid enough or sentimental enough, and he is certainly not in love enough to find himself standing in it with me.
Time for Doctor Who?
Doctor Who!
Alright, so there's a whole bunch of new Doctor Who news in anticipation of the new season, which is kicking off in a couple weeks, April 15th.
Yay, finally!
Finally new Doctor Who. And one big revelation that we've found out is apparently Bill's character, played by Pearl Mackie, the new companion, is going to be gay.
That is interesting. It'll definitely be a first for Doctor Who.
Not really, if you really think about it.
Well, no, that's right.
Captain Jack, you know.
So, no, it's not new, but I'm sure there are already people saying, oh, there's a gay companion. I'm not going to watch Doctor Who anymore.
Yeah, there's probably a bunch of people in Alabama or somewhere that are being like, they got them gays in Doctor Who. I ain't watching that Doctor Who no more.
And what we're always going to tell folks like this, too bad, so sad, so long.
It's like Pearl Mackie said, it's the 21st century. Who gives a crap?
I sure don't.
It's the same thing with the whole LeFou controversy. I mean, it's stupid. Nobody cares anymore.
And if you do, you probably have a problem.
Yeah, you need to look within yourself and your own tolerance and your own belief system. Because, honestly, love is love, so who cares? I mean, I don't want to get off on a rant here, but I mean, it's just silly in this day and age. And why wouldn't the doctor take on somebody that's gay into the TARDIS?
Right. I mean,
and guess what? We finally have a companion that's not gonna fall in love with the doctor.
Right?
And
here's another thing. There was an article out on Facebook today talking about how she's definitely probably going to be gone by the end of this season. And people are like, oh, you know, all of a sudden because, you know, they announced that she's gay, now she's going to be going away. She's not leaving because the character's gay.
Give me a break. I mean, how many one-season companions have we had? Martha? Donna? I mean, come on.
It happens, folks, and it has nothing to do with the character's sexuality, or else Mr. Captain Harkness would have been gone a long time ago. No, she's leaving because Chibnall wants to start with a fresh cast. Yeah, that's all.
Chris Chibnall deserves to have a clean slate, a new doctor, a new companion, his own stamp on Doctor Who, just like Moffat did.
Yeah, in fact, if you think about it, the only crossover we've had with Moffat was River Song.
Yeah.
And mind you, River was only in 2 episodes.
Right. She's been in more of that.
No, but 2 episodes before Moffat took over.
Right.
Because she was only in Silence of the Library.
Right.
So it still wasn't like a whole season-length companion kind of thing.
Right.
But yeah, Chibnall deserves a fresh start. So we predicted ages ago that Pearl was only going to be there for 1 season and then she would be gone.
Yeah. As soon as she was announced and it was announced that Capaldi was leaving, it was obvious that Pearl's character was going to be a 1-season companion.
Yeah. It makes sense.
And that was way before we found out that she was gay. So.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing wrong with her character. There's, I can't speak to the writing because we haven't seen the episodes yet.
Right.
But at the end of the day, Chibnall's going to want to start with a clean slate.
Yeah, and I honestly have no problems with that. I know there's been some argument out there that says that, well, you know, if the companion sticks around, it helps the audience adapt to the new doctor. Really? How did that work out for Capaldi and Clara? Because, frankly, that didn't work out too well. In fact, they were oil and water.
I completely agree there. I mean, Capaldi's first season was not great. It's not his fault. I just think the writing was bad. The second season was a lot better, but we were still ready for Clara to make her way out the door.
And you know, I liked Clara at the beginning. I thought she was going to be a good companion. And then, you know, the whole Impossible Girl storyline was really good.
But then after that,
as soon as they ended the Impossible Girl storyline, she should have been gone.
Yeah.
Because there was nothing left to her. She was just another tag-along.
Not only was she a tag-along, but she was also turning into a deceitful liar.
Yeah, that whole
lying
season,
to the doctor, lying to Mr. Pink, that whole series just drove me insane.
It was just so, so bad. And, you know, it just didn't make any sense to me at all, you know. And I don't, again, we're getting off on a rant. I don't want to start ranting on Clara because you guys know that how I feel about Clara. But I just think that having the companion there does not automatically make it easier for us to transition to the new doctor. Everybody's going to hate the new doctor at the beginning because it always, always happens. Everybody's like, well, he's not as good as the old doctor is.
Well, you know, and then, Tim's my doctor.
Yeah.
I hated Matt when we first started watching him, but he grew on me.
Right. And it's the same thing when we watched, you know, 9 turn to 10. That first episode, if you judge 10 on his first episode, oh my God. That episode was horrible.
He slept through three quarters of the episode.
It was terrible. But you know what? When he started to hit his stride, he became the best of the new era doctors. And it's the same thing with Matt. When Matt first came on, I couldn't stand Matt. I thought Matt was a terrible doctor. But then he started to grow on you. But just like all the other doctors, after a while, he starts to wane on you a little bit. And you're ready for him to go, and you're ready for something new and something different. And then Capaldi came, and everybody hated Capaldi. But you know what? I love Capaldi. I think Capaldi's been a great doctor.
Yep.
And I'm actually kind of sorry to see him go, but I completely understand it. You know, Chibnall needs his own plate. He needs a clean slate to be able to make his Doctor Who show. Because this is a full regeneration of Doctor Who. We need to go through this every 4 or 5 years just to kind of clean the cobwebs out. You know, we need a new showrunner, we need a new doctor, we need a new companion.
This is how we keep it fresh.
This is how we keep it fresh. This is how it all works. You know, this is why the show's been on for over 50 years.
It's funny because I saw somebody post a comment on the article about Capaldi leaving, saying, oh, now there's going to be another new doctor. Now, this show is probably not going to last that much longer.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
It's been going since 1963. Yep. Seriously?
And it's not going to be off the air anytime soon. Let's face it, Doctor Who is an institution now. It's never going to go away. And it's always going to be here. You know, I know fans get a little nervous when the ratings start to go down and, you know, oh my God, not as many people are watching Doctor Who as they used to. There's not as much impact. The numbers in BBC America have never been higher. You know, that's the crazy thing. You know, everybody feels like, well, Doctor Who's over. No, it's never been more popular. Ever. Ever. And in Britain, you know, maybe the numbers have gone down a little bit, but you know what? They have iPlayer over there, and you can watch Doctor Who on iPlayer, so you can watch it whenever the hell you want, and you don't have to watch it live. So, guess what? You know?
It used to be where, in the United States, you can only watch Doctor Who on PBS.
Yes.
But now we've got BBC America. It's more widely played worldwide than it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's more popular than it's ever been. It's an international phenomenon. It's a huge moneymaker for the BBC. And you know what? Yeah, maybe they might scale back the budget a little bit. They might, you know, make it a little less, you know, outlandish of a story. They might have to go back to some of their roots like they did in season one, where they actually had to have good writing instead of just having a bunch of whizzy special effects.
Well, check it out. We're getting a classic Cybermen.
Yeah. I mean, how about that? You know, maybe we don't have the special effects budget that we used to, but hey, maybe we'll tell better stories. You know, Lord knows we could use it. You know, last season was actually a really good season, but, you know, it still could have been better.
Yeah.
And this season, I have hopes for, but we'll see how it goes. All right, so one of the interesting things of the latest trailer that came out for Series 10 was at the end of the trailer, it looks like Capaldi is regenerating. So the odd thing about this is we know Capaldi's doctor is going to regenerate at the end of the year, but it's supposed to be during the Christmas episode, not during this season. So the fact that we're seeing a regeneration cycle start in a trailer makes you wonder about what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like one of these things where, well, you know, maybe he's giving some of his regeneration power to help somebody else. No, it looked like he was injured and starting to regenerate.
So here's where we start speculating.
Yes.
And we start have all our little theories.
Yes.
First, he can do a 10 where he has a whole...
Don't steal my ideas.
Okay, fine. You go for
it. We pre-showed this, and that was my idea, and you're stealing it! Son of a gun!
Fine, go for it.
Well, my thought is that he's going to have a victory tour, you know, kind of like 10 did, where he kind of just prolonged the whole regeneration process. But for the Christmas episode, he'll prolong it just long enough to have one more last adventure as the cranky old doctor, and then he'll regenerate to whatever the new hotness is.
I have a feeling that's probably what's going to happen. Because any other theory just sounds very implausible. He can either share his energy, like you just said, with somebody else, but like you mentioned, he looked injured in that trailer. Or he could pull off another 10 thing and have that vanity. And
that doesn't seem like him, though.
That's also wasting another regeneration.
Yeah, and that wouldn't fit this doctor's...
No, because he's not vain like 10 was.
Yeah, this doctor's personality at all. So it wouldn't make any sense to me.
So I'm pretty sure there's going to be a lot of speculation on this, but... I believe your theory will probably prove true.
Where he's just kind of holding off the regeneration until, you know, to have one more adventure kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm going to go with until I'm proven wrong. So we'll see what happens. All right. So one of the other interesting things that have developed in the last few weeks is apparently there is a new favorite doctor, and it's a woman named Phoebe Waller-Bridge. So apparently Phoebe, or maybe it's Phoebe.
It's probably Phoebe.
And maybe it's Phoebe. Yeah, I don't know. Phoebe, Phoebe, whatever.
It's Phoebe.
Sure?
I'm pretty sure it's Phoebe.
You don't know. Have you ever heard her name pronounced anywhere?
Anybody who's a woman who has a name like that is a Phoebe. That name isn't pronounced any
other way. Phoebe!
No, it's not.
It's Phoebe.
It's Phoebe.
You don't know.
Get on with it.
I'll laugh if it's actually Phoebe. Anyway, Phoebe Waller-Bridge apparently is the new bookie's best bet to being Doctor Who. She's apparently starred in Broadchurch, which makes sense. She's worked with Chris Chibnall before. She's also worked in a show called Fleabag.
Okay.
Okay, whatever. I haven't heard of it. But yeah, so apparently she's gone from a 20-to-1 bet to suddenly a 2-to-1 bet. So,
Interesting.
Yep.
And again, you know, if they do choose a woman to be the doctor, I have no problem with that either.
Yep.
And anybody that does, too bad, so sad, so long.
Just as long as it's not Tilda Swinton, because she did not look the part. Sorry.
She's
weird looking.
It's not that she's weird looking, because she's a very beautiful woman. It's just her acting is for much more serious roles. While the doctor needs to be serious sometimes, but he also needs to be very eccentric, very eclectic.
And I think it's important that this doctor is more approachable than Capaldi's doctor was, because Capaldi's doctor was the angry grandpa, you know.
Yeah, because I don't like to hug.
Yes, I think this doctor needs a bit more approachability, you know, to relate to some of the younger kids that are, you know, let's face it, the younger generation nowadays is more of a touchy feely kind of generation, you know. They need their safe rooms and whatnot. You know, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying that, you know, this isn't... They don't respond well to the authoritarian, angry grandpa doctor, you know, that Capaldi was. So,
I mean, we're dealing with millennials, so...
Yeah, so if we're trying to attract the young audience back, a young, energetic, young woman may be just what they need. You know, a young role model. You know, somebody that's strong, but still funny and approachable and a lot of fun. I don't know if Phoebe has that in her. I've never seen her act, but hopefully she does have those chops and can bring that to the role if she is indeed the person that becomes the doctor. And like you said, I have no problem with it, just as long as it's not Tilda Swinton, because I just don't see her in that role. She's too stiff.
No, every single time I think of her, I keep thinking her as the Snow Queen in Narnia.
Well, not even only that, she was also the master or whatever in Doctor Strange. And, you know, every role that I've ever seen her in, she's just been a very stoic, very stone-faced, no emotion kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe she has got a humor streak with her, but I've never seen it. And I think it would look weird seeing her try to do it.
Even when we saw her in Constantine, very stoic, very serious all the time.
Yeah, so no. Nope, nope. So, sure, Phoebe, you know, bring her on. It'd be an interesting twist, but, you know, we'll see. All right, so we know the episode titles for Series 10 now. The first episode is going to be called The Pilot, which is an interesting title because usually the name The Pilot is for the first episode of a new series. So, I'm thinking that this title is in regards to, like, an airplane pilot or, you know, the pilot of the TARDIS. You know, that kind of thing.
Maybe.
Episode 2 is actually called Smile.
That sounds creepy.
That's the emoji episode.
There's an emoji episode?
Yes. Oh, you haven't heard of the emoji bots?
Oh.
Yes, there's emoji robots. Killer emoji robots. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, and it's also written by the person that gave us the Forest of the Trees, whatever. The Arbor Day episode that everybody hated from season 8. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about there.
Okay.
Anyway, like I said, episode 3 is Thin Ice. Episode 4 is called Knock Knock.
Okay, now that sounds creepy.
Yes, that sounds creepy. Episode 5 is called Oxygen. Episode 6 is called Extremis.
Okie dokie.
Yeah. Episode 7 is called Rebirth. So I'm not sure, but I think this might be a 3-part episode arc.
Three? What?
Yes, there is, I know there is at least one 3-part episode arc that's going to be in the middle of the season. Extremis, Rebirth, and The Truth are the 3-episode arc.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think they've ever done a 3-episode. This is going to start feeling like the classic series back in the day where they had like 4 or 5 episodes that were all part of the same story arc. Now, mind you, those episodes were only like 20 or 30 minutes long, but some of those story arcs went for 12 episodes, yep. Didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. Now, the one that we were talking about, Oxygen, apparently is written by Jamie Matheson. And Jamie Matheson says this episode is very, very scary, like seriously so. Like, get behind the sofa and just stay there till it's over kind of scary.
Dang. Okay.
So, with that kind of buildup, okay, Jamie, bring it on, buddy.
It better be scary. See, that looks more scary. What is that? What episode is that?
That's part of that 3-story arc.
That looks creepy. Yeah. We're looking at something that looks like a mummy.
Yep. So, that's Oxygen, Extremis, and Rebirth. And then the episode 8 is called The Truth. Episode 9 is written by Mark Gatiss. It is the Ice Warriors episode, and that's called The Martian Queen. Episode 10 is called The Eaters of Light.
Great. That's going to be one of those Be Afraid of the Dark kind of episodes.
Mm-hmm. And then episode 11 and 12 is the 2-parter with the...
Classic Cybermen.
With the Mondas Cybermen. And it's called The Converted and Steel Skinned.
Yee. Okie dokie.
And apparently Missy's going to be in a lot of it, so she's going to be popping in and out throughout the season, so we'll be seeing her a little bit here and there. So
very cool. I like her character.
Should be interesting.
She's one of my favorite masters.
Yep.
Or mistress now.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for this particular episode of Transmissions from Atlantis. And definitely be staying tuned because... Be staying tuned.
You know what? You need to use words.
Words, yes. I'm talking like the stupid garbage people
from Walking Dead.
Yes. So stay tuned to Transmissions from Atlantis because our episodes are going to be coming a little bit more frequently of late because as Doctor Who begins to kick into high gear again, we're going to be returning to the weekly format to review each and every episode. So you're going to be hearing a lot more of us while Doctor Who is in its run.
Not to mention, there are a whole lot of movies coming out in the next few months.
Yes, it's the summer blockbuster season, so a lot of the big movies like Guardians of the Galaxy, the new Pirates movie, Valerian.
There's a ton of other stuff coming out.
There's a ton of them coming out. So we're definitely going to be keeping on top of those as well. So it's going to be a fun next few months. And thankfully, we won't have to talk about Walking Dead anymore.
Yay!
At least for until October.
I don't like the show anymore.
Oh, just give it a chance when it comes back.
Meh. I tried to give it a chance this past season, and it sucked. It failed.
This season was bad, okay? This season was bad. You can't judge it on that.
Yes, I can.
Anyway.
I'm judging it. It has been judged, and it has been found wanting.
Okay. Anyway, until next time, folks, we will bid you adieu and say allons-y.
Allons-y.
Goodbye, everybody.
Allons-y. I should say allons-y more often. Allons-y. Look sharp, Rose Tyler. Allons-y. And then, it'd be really brilliant if I met someone called Alonzo, because then I could say allons-y, Alonzo, every time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.